morning, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. Welcome to tonight's program. We have some of the sound from President Obama's pissed-off speech to... I think he was addressing the Bush crime family members who have been embedded in the national state security apparatus of the United States. They caused him some embarrassment on Christmas Day, and you know, he's angry. So I think that's who he talked to today. We're going to have some sound from that. Oh, my God. It's really crazy, isn't it? Have you got a big bowl of popcorn? That's about all that's left to do. Just sit back and watch this crazy movie. I got a couple emails here. One from Kay, our education affairs correspondent. It's not one of her report cards. It's just something she wrote. And Bob Alexander also sent in a couple of quick lines. I just want to share them with you because they're pretty good. We're going to be all over several topics. I think we're gonna try to do a Uncle Mike story corner, and it's a toss up right now. Is it John Pilger? How do you say his name? Pilger, or is it Chris Hedges? I don't know. They're both such excellent observers of the current political scene, and excellent writers about that scene. Just makes you extremely jealous, right? They are so good. So anyway, we're going to dazzle and entertain you tonight with all sorts of good stuff. So stick around, all right? Kay writes, I want to share the following with you. To ease the kids, now Kay, of course, is a school teacher in San Francisco. She writes, to ease the kids back into the groove this week, I've been showing Michael Moore's Bowling for Columbine, which works really well as an extension of our Bill of Rights Constitution unit from last semester. At one point in the film, Michael Moore is exploring the connection between the American media and our fear-based, trigger-happy society when he says, quote, "One thing I love about this country of mine, whether you're a psychotic killer or running for president of the United States, one thing you can always count on is America's fear of the black man," end quote. Kay says, I almost got whiplash when I heard that statement this morning. Of course, the president whom Michael Moore was referencing is George Herbert Walker Bush of Lee Atwater, Willie Horton fame. But it caused me to make a disturbing connection to the case of the current president and the so-called underwear bomber from Christmas Day. We have a president of African descent whom the right wing continues to claim was born in Kenya and practices the Muslim faith. And we now have a suspected bomber terrorist evildoer who is African from Nigeria and a practicing Muslim, or better said, a practicing Islamist. It's a Cheney twofer. Make the Obama administration appear to have failed to keep America safe while simultaneously tapping into the one thing you can always count on, America's fear of the black man. But it's all just a coincidence, right? I mean, Cheney's CIA thugs couldn't possibly have had a hand in allowing a terrorist incident that could have claimed nearly 300 lives to occur, especially one involving a young man whose ethnicity, nationality, and religion is very similar to the ethnicity, nationality, and religion that these same thugs continue to try to pull a pin on President Obama. Nah, of course not. Just like they couldn't possibly have been involved in allowing that incident carried out by Arabs back in 2001 to occur, the one that claimed 3,000 American lives and was used to justify invading an entirely different nation of Arabs? The parallels here are obvious to anyone with the sense God gave a sack of doorknobs. Whether their aim is to bring down Saddam Hussein or to do damage to President Obama, these bastards will stop at nothing. Okay. Well, yes, certainly. We are in agreement on that one, Kay. The universal white people's fear in this country of the black man. And it's justifiable. I mean, that fear is justifiable. because of all the damage that whites did to black or African consciousness. And even the most filthy racist still, at some point, diminishing point, but a point nonetheless, somewhere in his unconscious, there is the realization that he's doing something terribly, terribly bad by his attitude toward people of African descent in this country over the past 400 years. Bad in attitude, but bad in action, too. Hanging, dismembering, putting into slavery, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, I think everybody expects, well, except for those who are the most psychotic, everyone expects that there will be a day of reckoning of some sort, and not in a religious sense, but in a karmic sense, in some sort of a sense, a day of reckoning. If I steal this candy bar, something bad will happen. I'll drop a full Coke can on my big toe and it will break. You know, like that. So yeah, that universal fear is there. The Willie Horton ad was a classic example. It's funny, isn't it? To be the oppressor, to be the warmonger, to be the terrorist, and turn around and label everybody else that. Oh my God, it is, I don't mean funny, haha. I mean funny, sick, odd. Bob wrote in today too. He says, you know, as I was walking, out to pick up Nick from school, it struck me that trying to fix the 99.99% corrupt system we call the United States of America is a lot like trying to fix alcoholism or any other drug addiction. The first step in tackling alcoholism is to give up the myth that the drinking can be controlled. Normal, quote-quote, people, normal people have no problem controlling how much they drink, but the alcoholic must entirely, absolutely, and completely give up the myth that this time or any time the drinking can be controlled. And so I think we have to entirely, absolutely, and completely give up the myth of America in order to attempt to see if it's fixable. I've spent over half of my life defending an America that never existed, from the corporate greedhead Republicans that were or are hell-bent on completely taking it over. Over the last year or so, I've slowly been chipping away at and finally getting rid of the myth of America that was indoctrinated, implanted in my brain a long time ago. And I think I see something completely different now. The corporate greedhead Republicans are defending their America, the real America, the born from genocide and slavery America, from me and those like me. And all I can come up with after that is that if we play by their rules, we lose. So the first step is to kiss off the myth and refuse to play their game with their rules. Might seem a tad simplistic, but I've never been that fast on the uptake. I remember once in film class tentatively making the obvious to everyone but me observation about the Christ symbology in Cool Hand Luke, when a voice behind me in the auditorium intoned, "Duh, Bob." That you know, that's true. Truth usually comes in little dollops and bites, so that it is digestible. But what he wrote here is true. The corporate greedhead Republicans are defending their America from people like me, because they know what will happen. You know, the threat is not from a bunch of other crazy religious freaks outside the country. The threat is from the crazy religious freaks inside the country. And to them, we, normal people, as normal as we can be in this day and age, we are the threat. Did you realize that, Truth Seeker? You are part of the threat. Politics of panic would invite.
Screaming with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So Barack Obama had a meeting with his national security team. And after that meeting, he made it clear in an impromptu, no questions kind of press conference, what do you call it, Kathy? Availability? He may not, came out and made a statement. He clearly is not happy with the intelligence failures that led to this little event. He didn't discuss the possibility that it was a setup, but I, setup for him to deal with, but I'll stand by what I said last night. I think the whole thing is a setup. And maybe Obama understands it. Here's part of what he said.
When a suspected terrorist is able to board a plane with explosives on Christmas Day, the system has failed in a potentially disastrous way. And it's my responsibility to find out why and to correct that failure so that we can prevent such attacks in the future. And that's why shortly after the attempted bombing over Detroit, I ordered two reviews. I directed Secretary of Homeland Security Janet Napolitano to review aviation screening, technology, and procedures. She briefed me on her initial findings today, and I'm pleased that this review is drawing on the best science and technology, including the expertise of Secretary of Energy Stephen Chu and his department. I also directed my counterterrorism and homeland security advisor John Brennan to lead a thorough review into our terrorist watch listing system so we can fix what went wrong. As we discussed today, this ongoing review continues to reveal more about the human and systemic failures that almost cost nearly 300 lives.
Ah, well, this is, you know, a little low key at that point. Next, he details the nature of the intelligence failures that led to this near-miss attack. Can you imagine any member of the Bush crime family admitting this kind of failure? They still pretend 9/11 didn't happen on their watch. Remember what Dana Perino said. And that all their planned counterterrorism measures work perfectly and are worth the violations of all our civil liberties, despite all these near misses. Yeah.
As I described over the weekend, elements of our intelligence community knew that Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab had traveled to Yemen and joined up with extremists there. It now turns out that our intelligence community knew of other red flags.
Uh-oh.
Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula sought to strike not only American targets in Yemen, but the United States itself. And we had information that this group was working with an individual who was known, who we now know was, in fact, the individual involved in the Christmas attack. The bottom line is this. The U.S. government had sufficient information to have uncovered this plot and potentially disrupt the Christmas Day attack.
Uh-huh.
But our intelligence community failed to connect those dots.
Oh, yeah?
Which would have placed the suspect on the no-fly list. In other words, this was not a failure to collect intelligence. It was a failure to integrate and understand the intelligence that we already had.
Mm-hmm.
The information was there. Agencies and analysts who needed it had access to it. And our professionals were trained to look for it and to bring it all together. Now, I will accept that intelligence by its nature is imperfect, but it is increasingly clear that intelligence was not fully analyzed or fully leveraged. That's not acceptable, and I will not tolerate it.
Oh, tell me again, Mr. President, why we had this massive, expensive Department of Homeland Security put together by the Nazis who used to and to a certain degree still do run the country, which is not to suggest that Barack Obama is not, another corporate representative. This one a lot more intelligent than the last several that we've had. But you know, he is what he is. It is what it is. Everything is what it is. You understand what I'm saying with that? Sure you do. Sure you do. But it's one thing to do what the power demands that you do. It's something else again to have that power so disrespect you that it will publicly embarrass you like this. And, of course, it's easy enough to do when you realize what Michael Moore said in Bowling for Columbine. The one thing he can count on in this country is the absolute fear of the black man. And, of course, riding high into that pantheon of fearsome creatures now are dark-skinned Muslims.
Right?
Sorry, I had to bend over and turn off the space heater. It's colder than a well digger's ass down here tonight, here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. It really is. We have one more comment from Mr. Obama today, but we'll play it when we come back after the break. I was talking to Janet up in Minneapolis, where I and three or four other liberal, well, they claim to be liberal, talk show hosts will be for a big party coming up in a couple of weeks. Janet owns the station, KTNF. I told her it was cold here. I said it's going to go down to 17 degrees tonight. And it took her about 5 minutes to stop laughing. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Listen to right-wing radio. Here's Mike Malone.
Look at the state of the world that we live in, where no one gives a damn about the future of children. Just building the cash flow, making a bank account. Let us expose the truth.
25 before the hour.
I don't understand, but what kind of a man.
So, President Obama met with his national security team to let them know he was, apparently let them know he was kind of pissed off because of what happened over Detroit on Christmas Day. Frankly, I think it was a setup. It was done deliberately. We talked about this last night. And I think Obama probably knows that. He understands what he's up against. He has unprecedented in modern political history in this country. He has the immediately preceding administration. Thugs from within that administration criticizing everything he does. And, you know, it's just unheard of. Of course, corporate media in this country doesn't make too much of a deal about that. But every time Cheney opens his filthy spider-infested mouth, he is doing something that it just simply should not be done. Cheney had his chance, and he took full advantage of it. Cheney destroyed the country. Cheney absolutely destroyed the country and gave rise to these pissants that now infest right-wing media, right-wing politics, right-wing everything. Cheney should just, I don't know, there should be a way to silence him. Shouldn't there be? You'd think if the man had any self-respect whatsoever or even a shred of dignity, he would shut the hell up and go do what he, you know, what he likes to do. Look at the torture tapes. And play with himself while he does it. That's what Cheney's about. He's a torture porn freak. Jesus. You know, all those missing tapes and pictures from Abu Ghraib, guess where they are? Of course they are. Cheney has them. Sick bastard. So anyway, Obama understands all this, and Obama being the good corporatist that he is, come on, be real. Obama did not make any effort when the results, the economic results of 8 years of the Bush crime family really hit the fan. Obama made no effort whatsoever to rescue the middle class or the working class in this country. None. He simply did what his predecessor had done, and that is send hundreds of billions of dollars into this filthy sump hole that is Wall Street or the financial services industry. And what are these bastards doing? They're just doing it all over again. Hey, let's do it again. These people are stupid. Let's just keep doing it. So in that regard, we all know that President Obama is a good corporatist. That's what he's about. He wants to do it with less of a bludgeon and more of a you know, one of those little hammers that they tap you on the knee when you go into the doctor's office to see if you still have any reflexes. But he's still using a hammer. So anyway, Here's the last little bit of sound we have for you. Obama sums it all up with a demand for better intelligence sharing and defenses.
Time and again, we've learned that quickly piecing together information and taking swift action is critical to staying one step ahead of a nimble adversary. So we have to do better, and we will do better, and we have to do it quickly. American lives are on the line. So I made it clear today to my team. I want our initial reviews completed this week. I want specific recommendations for corrective actions to fix what went wrong. I want those reforms implemented immediately so that this doesn't happen again and so we can prevent future attacks. And I know that every member of my team that I met with today understands the urgency of getting this right, and I appreciate that each of them took responsibility for the shortfalls within their own agencies. As these violent extremists pursue new havens, we intend to target al-Qaeda wherever they take root, forging new partnerships to deny them sanctuary, as we are doing currently with the government in Yemen. As our adversaries seek new recruits, we'll constantly review and rapidly update our intelligence and our institutions. As they refine our tactics, we'll enhance our defenses, including smarter screening and security at airports, and investing in the technologies that might have detected the kind of explosives used on Christmas. In short, we need our intelligence, homeland security, and law enforcement systems, and the people in them to be accountable and to work as intended, collecting, sharing, integrating, analyzing, and acting on intelligence as quickly and effectively as possible to save innocent lives. Not just most of the time, but all of the time.
Oh.
That's what the American people deserve. As president, that's exactly what I will demand.
Hey, well, good luck with that. I think that's a good demand. You have been charged to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States, and included in that oath is the implication that in doing that you will be providing some sort of cover for the American people. Of course, there's a different way to do this, and that is to withdraw all of our forces from these countries that we have invaded, Mr. President, whose people we are murdering, Mr. President, whose countries we are destroying and seeding with depleted uranium and great big soldiers and Marines who come stomping through their Bronze Age villages. That would be a good way to do it. I'll bet if we just got the hell out of these places, Mr. President, it probably would take the wind out of the sails, to coin a term, of the jihadist movement, to the extent that they wouldn't be so intent on recruiting 23-year-olds, or so the story goes, to come over above Detroit and blow up a bomb. You think? And the 19 bombers who came to this country, was it 9 years ago? Almost. Perhaps they would not have come here had we not had in their holy places great big soldiers and Marines who were stomping around disregarding the holiness of Mecca and Medina. But, of course, that is those are ideas that have been put forth by people like Noam Chomsky for years, decades, by other thinkers, other political experts who take a look at what we've done, either under the guise of fighting the Soviet Union during the Cold War or under the guise of perpetuating the expansion of markets that predatory capitalism constantly needs. The exploitation of labor that capitalism absolutely needs. Yada, 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 yada. Wouldn't that be better, Mr. President, to all of a sudden get goddamn real? Just once, somebody, get real. And realize why they really hate us. And just leave. Just say, hey, goodbye. Thanks for all the fish. Sorry, we completely destroyed your country, your society, your sense of whatever, tribalhood, nationhood, whatever it is you think you have. Goodbye. We're out of here. Sorry. We'll send you a check for all the damage. Didn't mean to do it. E-I-O. You know, why not try that? Is that so goddamn impossible for the United States of, by God, America to try just once? Huh? Just once. Oh, at the same time, say, oh, by the way, rest of the world, we're kind of pulling the plug on the Israelis. They have enough nuclear bombs to wipe out the whole goddamn planet, so they're on their own, too. So y'all work it out, okay? Y'all work it out. Pakistan, you have nukes. Israel, you have nukes. You know, whatever you need to do, right? It's all good. I mean, if you've got to destroy each other and make the planet uninhabitable for some goddamn silliness about whose God is more powerful, then go ahead! You know, the place has been around for about, I don't know, 12 billion years, 6 billion years. I don't know, maybe it's time to just annihilate the damn thing. Just take that little blue dot and go, all done. Or we can start stripping people as they go through airport security. Right. Take off all your clothes. All right, lift them. Okay, bend over, cough. Okay, you can get on board. A day's going to come with somebody with a severe case of hemorrhoids is going to be told they have to go into the other room to have those hemorrhoids checked out because it really looks like the little tailings coming off of a stick of dynamite. You know what I'm saying? Incredible. Unbelievable. We live in a comic book. An absolute comic book. That's where we're all kind of trapped right now. You know, and not by comic book, I don't mean comic like funny, ha ha ha. I mean, what am I talking about? Illustrated novel? Is that what they're called now? We're living in one of those where full body scans, where, you know, those parts of your physical anatomy you might not want everybody to. How long do you think it's going to take before all that stuff winds up on YouTube, right? Right? Oh, and by the way, did you hear this bit about scanning children? Violates the child porn laws in just about every state in the union. So how are they going to get around that? How are they going to do that? And also, where is it? Yeah, I know. Several of you sent this to me today about Chertoff. Mr. Chertoff. What does Chertoff do now? What does this son of a bitch do? What is Chertoff? What do we used to call him? Huh? Skeletor. Right. Skeletor. Well, oh, I've got it in here someplace. He's one of the people who has a great interest, financial interest in these body scanners. I'll find it during the break. Oh, Jesus, God. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. So I take a look around to see what do I.
Truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Yeah, these digital strip search machines. That's what James Ridgway refers to them as, writing on Mother Jones' website today. He says, known by their opponents as digital strip search machines, the full-body scanners use one of two technologies. Millimeter wave sensors or backscatter x-rays to see through clothing, producing ghostly images of naked passengers. Yet critics say that these too are highly fallible and are incapable of revealing explosives hidden in body cavities, an age-old method for smuggling contraband. If that's the case, a terrorist could hide the entire bomb works within his or her body and breeze through the virtual strip search undetected. Yesterday, the London Independent reported on what it called authoritative claims that officials at the UK Department for Transport and Home Office have already tested the scanners and were not persuaded that they would work comprehensively against terrorist threats to aviation, end quote. Yet the rush toward full-body scans already seems unstoppable. They were mandated today as part of the enhanced screening for travelers from selected countries. And hundreds of the machines are already on order at a cost of about $150,000 apiece. Within days of the bombing attempt, Reuters was reporting that the greater U.S. government shift toward using the high-tech devices could create a boom for makers of security imaging products and has already created a speculative spike in share prices in some companies, end quote, which brings us to the money shot. The body scanner is sure to get a go-ahead because of the illustrious personages hawking them. Michael Chertoff, former Homeland Security chief. Now heads the Chertoff Group, which represents one of the leading manufacturers of whole-body imaging machines. It's called Rapiscan System. Oh, is that Rapiscan? Let's call it Rapiscan Systems. For days after the attack, Chertoff made the rounds of the media promoting the scanners, calling the most recent bombing attempt, quote, a very vivid lesson in the value of that machinery, end quote. All without disclosing his relationship to Rapiscan. And according to the Washington Post, Chertoff's advocacy for the technology dates back to his time in the Bush administration. In 2005, Homeland Security ordered the government's first batch of the scanners, five of them, from California-based Rapiscan Systems. Today, 40 of them are in use at 19 U.S. airports, numbers expected to skyrocket. Because of the Christmas Day incident, the TSA this week said it will order 300 more of these machines. The Washington Examiner last week ran down an entire list of all the former Washington politicians and staff members from the Bush administration who are now part of what it calls the full body scanner lobby. One manufacturer, according to the Cleveland Plain Dealer, is American Science and Engineering Incorporated. That company has retained the K Street firm of Wexler and Walker to lobby for federal deployment of security technology by the Department of Homeland Security and Department of Defense. Individual lobbyists on this account include former TSA Deputy Administrator Tom Blank, who also worked under House Speaker Newt Gingrich. Chad Wolf, former Assistant Administrator for Policy at TSA and a former aide to K. Bailey Hutchinson, Republican senator from Texas, a top Senate appropriator, and the ranking Republican on Transportation Committee is also lobbying. And it goes on and on and on. Former Senator Al D'Amato, Republican in New York, represents L3 Systems. L3 has developed a more sophisticated system that could prevent smuggling of almost anything on the body. Yada, 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 yada. Now, in forecasting the fate of the full-body scanners, we can turn to recent history, which saw the rapid rise and decline of the previous miracle screening technology. In the years following 9/11, dozens of explosive trace portals, ETPs, were installed in airports across the country at a cost of about $160,000 each. These were the so-called puffer machines. They were called that because they blow air on passengers to dislodge explosive particles. They were once celebrated as the no-touch pat-down, but in a Denver test by CBS in 2007, a network employee was sprayed with explosives and then walked through the airport's three puffers without any trouble. The machines also would set off false alarms. They frequently broke down, and the maintenance costs were, surprise, surprise, sky high. After spending more than $30 million on the puffer machines, most of them purchased from GE, the Transportation Safety Administration announced earlier this year that it was suspending their use. A report last month from the Government Accountability Office found that the TSA had not adequately tested the puffers before buying them. Of course not. So what will happen if the full body scanner goes the way of the puffer? Well, there's always the next generation of security equipment, the body orifice security scanner, or boss chair. This contraption, which has an uncomfortable resemblance to an electric chair, is used in prisons, mostly in the UK, for tracing cell phones, knives, and other dangerous contraband that's been, you know, inserted into body cavities by inmates. So far, it only detects metal. But you never know. Son of a bitch. We're just in crazy land. It's just crazy land. The BOSS, the boss, body orifice security scanner, the boss, mofo, we're going to put you on the boss. Sit your ass down on the boss. Let's see if Joan Rivers can deal with the boss. All right, we'll be back. The boss! So JW writes in, Mike, I think the simple solution to airport security is to convert all airports into nudist colonies. The BOSS. What is that? Body orifice scanning security. Oh, my God. It's getting crazy. Cat Mary, who writes from Memphis, create a problem regarding the body scans. Create a problem so that people cry out for a solution, then offer your solution. In the case of airports, the solution is to violate American rights and damage your health. In adults, even low-dose x-rays damage and mutate cells affecting DNA, bone marrow, apoptosis? What is that? Do you know what that is? Bone marrow, the heart, blood cells, etc., and cause both solid cancers and leukemia. It's worse for children. X-rayed boys less than a year old have 3 to 4 times the lifetime cancer risk of adult males exposed to the same dose. For girls, the risk is almost double. In fetuses, X-raying causes brain damage, including retardation. Body scans help cull useless eaters while simultaneously providing fodder for the pharmaceutical corporatists who thrive on sickness. They also accustom Americans to obeying ridiculous and harmful orders from thugs in uniforms. Cat Mary, who is disgusted in Memphis. It's astonishing. Michael Chertoff, and as Irish Dave reminds us, I talked about this years ago, Chertoff is Russian for of the devil. Michael Chertoff, I wondered what happened to him, that skeletal-looking bastard. I thought he just got back in his box someplace, you know, and... But he runs a company. He's a financial, has a financial interest in a body scan company. That, you know, sure, of course. Of course. Yeah, now, Chertoff doesn't need a body scan. All you have to do is hold him up to the light. You know, you can see pretty much what's going on. Oh, look, there's this. No, that's not his heart. What is that? Oh, that's his epiglottis. Christ, for a minute there, I thought it was his heart. No, not in this guy. Are you serious? Time for some Orwell. Thanks to Jeremy in Southern California, who writes, Mike, regarding what we all know about the so-called war on terror, keep knowing that some of us are acutely aware of its true purpose, and we will never forget what George Orwell said regarding the war, to wit. In accordance to the principles of doublethink, It does not matter if the war is not real or when it is. That victory is not possible. The war is not meant to be won. It is meant to be continuous. The essential act of modern warfare is the destruction of the produce of human labor. A hierarchical society is only possible on the basis of poverty and ignorance. In principle, the war effort is always planned to keep society on the brink of starvation. The war is waged by the ruling group against its own subjects, and its object is not victory over Eurasia or East Asia, but to keep the very structure of society intact. End quote. Madness. It's just absolute madness. Body cavity search. Just to ride an airplane? Oh, man. Gordon in Oklahoma City says, regarding the body cavity search, Mike, perhaps TSA personnel can be trained to properly perform digital prostate examinations for the male passengers at the same time. It will be amusing how many right-wing Christian fundamentalists become frequent flyers. Gordon. Oh, my God. And it's real. I mean, this stuff is absolutely, really, truly occurring. Now, these body scan machines, just take a look at tomorrow's stock market report, I guess. Look for some of these companies that produce body scanning machines and check their stock prices. 300 machines already ordered. Well, there you go. There's your jobs, your stimulation plan or something. Even Obama, John Pilger, of course, who is one of the more acerbic and exciting writers on the political scene, says in 1984, George Orwell described a superstate, Oceania, whose language of war inverted lies that passed into history and became truth. The party slogan was, who controls the past controls the future. Who controls the present controls the past. Barack Obama is the leader of a contemporary Oceania. In two speeches at the close of the decade, the Nobel Peace Prize winner affirmed that peace was no longer peace, but rather a permanent war that, quote, extends well beyond Afghanistan and Pakistan to disorderly regions, failed states, diffuse enemies, end quote. He called this global security and invited our gratitude. To the people of Afghanistan, which the U.S. has invaded and occupied, he said wittily, we have no interest in occupying your country. You know, didn't you fall out when you heard that, too? Remember that? Wait a minute. What are we doing? Oh, never mind. In Oceania, truth and lies are indivisible. According to Obama, the American attack on Afghanistan in 2001 was authorized by the United Nations Security Council. There was no UN authority. Obama said that the world supported the invasion in the wake of the 11 September 2001 attacks. In truth, all but three of 37 countries surveyed by Gallup expressed overwhelming opposition to the invasion. Obama said that America invaded Afghanistan, quote, only after the Taliban refused to turn over bin Laden, end quote. In 2001, the Taliban tried three times to hand over bin Laden for trial, according to Pakistan's military regime, and they were ignored. Even Obama's mystification of the 9/11 attacks as justification for his war is false. More than 2 months before the Twin Towers were attacked, the former Pakistani diplomat Niaz Naik was told by the Bush administration that a U.S. military assault would take place by mid-October. This is before 9/11. The Taliban regime in Kabul, which the Clinton administration has secretly supported, was no longer regarded as stable enough to ensure U.S. control over oil and gas pipelines to the Caspian Sea. Therefore, it had to go. Obama's most audacious lie is that Afghanistan today is a, quote, safe haven, end quote, for al-Qaeda's attacks on the West. His own national security advisor, James Jones, retired general, said in October that there were fewer than 100 al-Qaeda operatives in Afghanistan. According to U.S. intelligence, 90% of the Taliban are hardly Taliban at all, but a tribal localized insurgency who see themselves as opposing the U.S. because it is an occupying power. The war is a fraud. Only the terminally gormless remain true to the Obama brand of world peace. Beneath the surface, however, there is serious purpose. Under the disturbing General Stanley McChrystal, who gained distinction for his assassination squads in Iraq, the occupation of Afghanistan is a model for those disorderly regions of the world still beyond Oceania's reach. This is known as COIN counterinsurgency, and draws together the military, aid organizations, psychologists, anthropologists, the media and public relations, hirelings, covered in jargon about winning hearts and minds. It aims to incite civil war. Tajiks and Uzbeks against Pashtuns. The Americans did this in Iraq and destroyed a multi-ethnic society. They built walls between communities which had once intermarried, ethnically cleansing the Sunnis and driving millions out of the country.
Mass murdered in containers. The fact is, in Afghanistan, more died than in New York, and most of them civilians. Hail Caesar! This is what you're fighting for. The king of Death Row, Texas, elected by his brother-in-law. Hail Caesar!
Do it! Don't say nothing! Hey, hey! Hear the sound of the falling rain, coming down like an Armageddon flame.
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's More Mike Malloy.
Okay. 21 past the hour. John Pilger. Obama's lies over the Afghanistan war remind us of the lessons of 1984. The purpose of the U.S. Policy here is to incite civil war in these areas. As Pilger said, the Americans did this in Iraq and destroyed a multi-ethnic society. They built walls between communities which had once intermarried, ethnically cleansing the Sunnis and driving millions out of the country. Embedded media reported this as peace. American academics bought by Washington and so-called security experts briefed by the Pentagon appeared on the BBC to spread the good news. As in 1984, the very opposite was true. Something similar is planned for Afghanistan. People are to be forced into target areas controlled by warlords, bankrolled by the CIA and the opium trade. That these warlords are barbaric is irrelevant. We can live with that, a Clinton-era diplomat once said of the return of oppressive Sharia law in a stable Taliban-run Afghanistan. Favored Western relief agencies, engineers, and agricultural specialists will attend to the humanitarian crisis and so secure the subjugated tribal lands. That is the theory. It worked after a fashion in Yugoslavia, where ethnic sectarian partition wiped out a once peaceful society, but it failed in Vietnam, where the CIA's strategic Hamlet program was designed to corral and divide the southern population and so defeat the Viet Cong, the Americans' catch-all term for the resistance, Viet Cong, similar to Taliban. Behind much of this are the Israelis, who have long advised the Americans in both the Iraq and the Afghanistan adventures, ethnic cleansing, wall building, checkpoints, collective punishment, and constant surveillance. These are claimed as Israeli innovations that have succeeded in stealing most of Palestine from its native people. And yet, for all their suffering, the Palestinians have not been divided irrevocably, and they endure as a nation against all odds. The most telling forerunners of the Obama plan, which the Nobel Peace Prize winner and his general and his PR men prefer we forget, the most telling forerunners of this plan are those that failed in Afghanistan itself. The British in the 19th century, the Soviets in the 20th attempted to conquer that wild country by ethnic cleansing and were seen off, though after terrible bloodshed. Imperial cemeteries are their memorials. People power, sometimes baffling, often heroic, remains the seed beneath the snow, and invaders fear it. It was curious, wrote Orwell in 1984, to think that the sky was the same for everybody in Eurasia or East Asia, as well as here, and the people under the sky were also very much the same everywhere, all over the world, people ignorant of one another's existence, held apart by walls of hatred and lies, and yet almost exactly the same, people who were storing up in their hearts and bellies and muscles the power that would one day overturn the world. Well. Bob in Kentucky says, and what about the folks with prosthetic devices, artificial limbs? Are the TSA loonies going to disassemble them to make sure there is no Semtex? This is like living in Mad Magazine. Yeah, it is. All right, I'll tell you what, we have a break coming here. We're going to take your phone calls if you would like to climb aboard the crazy train tonight. Huh? I was listening today on Sirius Satellite Radio as we did some errands around the bustling, booming city of Atlanta. I was listening to Lynn Samuels on Sirius Satellite Radio. She's on every day for what, noon to two? Is it noon to two Eastern? Good show. She cracks me up. Lynn Samuels always cracks me up. And she is, she's, well, if you've never listened to her, I'm not gonna try to explain what she does, but it's a real interesting program. Lynn uses the F-bomb very, very frequently, doesn't she? It's so weird. I'm in the car listening to Sirius, and I forget I'm listening to satellite radio. We're sitting there in the parking lot waiting for Molly to come out. The Presbyterian church school that she goes to for kindergarten, right? We're sitting there. I don't know, Kathy was writing out bills or something, and I'm trying to read the Times. So I listen to Lynn Samuels in the background. And F-bomb. And I could feel the foundations of the Presbyterian church, whose parking lot we were sitting in, shake. I like Lynn. We met her a couple years ago up in New York. I like Lynn Samuels. Noon to two Eastern on Sirius. We'll be right back, and we will take your phone call. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. Marty is in Fresno, California, listening on XM. Hey, Marty.
Hey, Mike. Can you hear me?
Yeah. So far.
I'm driving truck, so it could be a bad sell. That's the government for you.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, this since we're quoting George's, I thought I'd quote George Wallace, who said between Republicans and Democrats, rate of signs were the difference. He's more right now than he was when he said it.
Who?
George Wallace.
Oh, George Wallace. Uh-huh.
Yes. Anyway, I can barely hear you.
Whoops. I guess we got a bad connection, Marty. I'm sorry. Was that our phone or was it his phone, Kathy? Do you have any idea? No? Okay. Jeff is in Seattle listening on Sirius. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, how you doing? You know, I want to preface this by with a little experience. At the age of 12 in 1966, I had the fortune of moving to Saigon. Because my father had taken a job as a pilot with an airline that favored the CIA.
Uh-huh. That wouldn't have been Air America, would it?
Yes. And I lived there until 1971 when I was 17.
Uh-huh. That must have been one hell of an experience.
It really was. You know, we lived on the economy. There was no compounds or anything. You know, there was very few dependents at that time. The Army had already gotten all the dependents who were living there prior to when I got there. The Army had moved them out because they couldn't guarantee their protection.
Uh-huh.
So there weren't that many American dependents in Saigon then when I was there. So everything was on the economy.
Right.
But anyway, I just wanted to tell you that the only English-speaking TV station was the Armed Forces Vietnam Network, and so the propaganda that would come across there was always the win hearts and minds. They don't even change the script.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Iraq has insurgents, but in Vietnam, the insurgents were the Viet Cong. The Viet Cong were not regular North Vietnamese Army.
Right, right.
So the scenario is exactly the same. It's mm-hmm. just, and there was a company in Saigon called RMKBRJ, and if you do an internet search on that, you'll find that there's several, those were initials of people who now are connected with, Kellogg Brown and Root,
mm-hmm.
Halliburton, and they're the same name. So it's nothing's changed. And RMKBRJ, by the way, had a reputation for war profiteering.
Right.
They were the contractors for the military, built the air bases and, also did, you know, a little spook work here and there, I'm sure, but,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's just it's the same scenario. It's the exact same thing going on.
And the thing that is, scary, appalling, frightening, laughable, I don't know, pick a word, about all this is that, we seem to live in a country, the United States of America, where we pay no attention to history, even immediate history. I mean, here we go, doing it again. And, you know, there are 58,000 names on a wall in D.C., and there are 3 million dead Indochinese, and we're pretending like none of that happened, or we're pretending like, okay, but this time, you know, this time we're going to do it right. Jesus God, it's mind-boggling. That's all. It's just mind-boggling.
Yeah, if Westmoreland could just do a second thought, I'm sure he would have something to say about it.
Yeah, I'm sure he would. Yeah. But
I just want you to know too that I share your passion and your anger at this whole thing. It is exactly what went on in Vietnam. It's just there's a lot more money changing hands.
And now they've got
Blackwater. And mm-hmm. Blackwater, you know, there were spooks in Vietnam, but Blackwater takes it to a whole new level.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, so, you know, it's not a good deal at all.
It isn't. Jeff, thanks. I appreciate your comments, all right?
Have a good night.
All right, man. Thank you. Take care. Yeah, the spooks in Vietnam, at least there was a little bit of, they were discreet. You know, they committed their murders and did their profiteering away from the cameras. Now, you know, isn't Blackwater a publicly traded company? I mean, or some of these other companies, the DynCorp and the rest of these companies that provide assassins, killers, demolitions experts, people who work outside of any law. These people who work for these corporations are true outlaws. Whose law do they follow? Certainly not the Uniform Code of Military Justice. Certainly not the laws of the United States of America. Certainly not the laws of the country in which they operate. Certainly not the laws, international laws established at Nuremberg or the Geneva Conventions. So by whose laws do these hired killers operate? No one's. They define the term outlaw. If you work for one of these military contractors and you're in a country that the United States has invaded and is now occupying and attempting to subdue in order to get its natural resources or access to for a pipeline, and if you are one of these people, one of these hired killers, and you see someone you don't like, or just for the sheer sport of it, you decide to shoot someone dead, who's to A, stop you, B, punish you? No one. Isn't that a definition of anarchy? I realize, although I've never been in combat, I realize that in combat it is anarchy. We have rules of war, which is insanity codified, but we do have rules of war. But I would imagine when people are in the throes of combat and their very life is at stake, nobody is thinking to themselves, oh, gee, let's see now, what would the Geneva Conventions say about the person I'm about to fill up with 50 caliber ammunition, slugs, bullets? But the private contractors, the ones who operate outside the law, at least soldiers, people in the military, United States military, although that is starting to fade a bit, I read an article today that the soldiers coming up now are not being, they're being told that their first obligation is to complete the mission. There was a time in this country where the first obligation of a soldier was to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. Now it is to complete the mission. Oh my. Tobias is in Lincoln, Nebraska, listening on XM. Hey, Tobias.
Hello.
Hi.
I just wanted to tell you about the full body scanners that the government's going to buy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it reminds me of an article I read a while ago, I can't tell you where, about how the Iraqi police forces are buying these supposed bomb-detecting wands that all they are is just a stick with some flashing lights on them. Have you heard about that?
No, but they must be sold by Kellogg, Brown, and Root or somebody.
I can't remember who they're sold by, but the reason that they can get away with it is that they haven't been through any kind of scientific testing, and I don't think that these full body scanners have been through a lot of testing either. We don't know how they will work in an actual airport setting. We don't know what their limits are. We don't know how effective they will be, and we're going to throw millions of dollars of taxpayer money on them.
Oh, well, but that doesn't mean anything anymore. You know, there was a time, Tobias, when the phrase spending the taxpayers' money meant something. All it is now is a political slogan that is used by politicians whenever they want to object to some sort of expenditure. You never hear that when it's about the military. You only hear that when it's part of the social safety net. So as far as spending the taxpayers' money on machines that may or may not work, let's all pause and yawn. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything at all. But, it means something to you and to me. And I certainly get what you're saying. Tobias, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. We have a break rapidly approaching. So stick around. If you are on hold, we'll get your call when we come back. If you're not, come on. You want to talk tonight or not? 877-996-2556. I'd like to hear what you have to what you have to say. We have an email from Prairie 2. He lives! I know, a lot of people thought, whatever happened to Prairie 2? He's right here, although this is very long. Well, it's not that long. We'll try to work it in when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Seekers, here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, Liz writes in. And Liz writes, so a flight from Amsterdam to Detroit is about 8 hours. And the latest customs regulation requires the submission of passenger manifestos prior to takeoff. So that gives customs some 8 hours of flight time to identify a potential threat, even if somehow incompetence or malfeasance allowed a person with ill intent on a flight. Okay, so it is Christmas Day, and maybe they gave their best agency security watchers the day off to be with family and left it up to some bored and possibly resentful government employee who, well, you know, government employees, right? Right. I accept that it is likely an inside job because it all does sound outside the realm of reality, but who says it was an inside job on the government end? Liz asks, is it just possible that Northwest Airline employees or airport employees in Amsterdam were in cahoots with the bad guys? We are assuming that the airline employees submitted the correct information, which would have identified a threat, and indeed that is what the government says happened. But did they? The U.S. government certainly wouldn't want to admit in public that a little or a lot of grease on an airline employee's palm exposed the whole passenger manifest security system as a house of cards. I know that is what I would do. I would be out front yelling at the top of my lungs that our government screwed up again, rather than admit that a few well-directed bribes or threats can undermine the whole system. I wonder how many airline employees and or airport workers would need to be in on such a thing to subvert the whole idea of no-fly lists and terrorist watch lists. If it is only 1 to 3, then that is a problem. How many people would know once the ticket was purchased and the person was at the gate that this person didn't check luggage? How many people would scan the name against a list of some kind? Who issued the ticket? You can't just walk up to a ticket counter and buy a one-way ticket for an international flight to the U.S. without showing a passport, really. And in the case of foreign nationals, they won't let you board a U.S.-bound flight without a valid visa. A lot of questions in my mind because you are right, this doesn't add up. Even with a visa, the rules clearly state that a foreign national must have a passport and a visa to enter the U.S., well, unless they're from one of 35 countries in the visa waiver program, which Nigeria is not. Liz. Yeah, I mean, the whole thing stinks. And I think anyone with any analytical sense left can look at what happened on December 25th and now, you know, take the event and work backwards and realize that this was not some dumbass mistake. This was not connecting the dots unless everybody involved in this thing, from security at the Amsterdam airport to Northwest Airlines to the U.S. government to every single entity, person, system involved, had to get it wrong all at the same time. Oh, bat snot. We know damn good and well that didn't happen. And then there's the mysterious South Indian gentleman, or no, South Asian gentleman, which means Indian, I guess, who escorted Mullah Talab, or whatever his name is, the 23-year-old Nigerian suicider, through two or three checkpoints. Well, this man does not have a passport, but that's what we do in Sudan. Let him on board the airplane. What? Let him on board the airplane. It's okay. Oh, okay. That really happened? That really happened? And then, after all of this, the guy is sitting there, and he breaks out his little kit of death-dealing molecules and the firing pin, the blasting cap, the scratch and sniff surface, whatever the hell it was, didn't work? Oh, my God. Didn't work. But you and I, well, not you and I, we don't go for this bat snot, but the American public now, and the President of the United States has put his seal of pissed offedness on all of it. We are all to believe it's another example of U.S. security not connecting the dots. God damn it, if their computers would just match up. We just had full body scanner thingies. Well, what about that? What about this? Come on. Come on. Mr. President, please. You know, please don't. Everybody in this country over the age of 12 lived through the attack on September 11, 2001 and remembers it clearly. Please, you know, and the lying, deceiving so-called 2001 report and all the duplicity, all the garbage, all the crap that 15 bombers or 19 bombers were able to defeat with box cutters. Jesus Christ. The most expensive, sophisticated, technological security and weapon system in the history of the human race. And we're all supposed to believe that. And our North American Air Defense Command just happened not to work that day. And now we're supposed to accept this. That some 23-year-old Nigerian whose pappy had warned the authorities, my boy's nuts, my boy's done gone round the bend. You gotta stop my boy. He's been hanging out with them fundamentalists. Stop him, stop him. No, no, sir, we're not going to stop him. We're going to allow him to travel 8,000 miles with no return ticket and no luggage and pay for his ticket in cash. Now go sit down, sir. There's other things at play here. Go back to your Nigerian bank and shut up. Don't you get tired of this? Don't you get tired of being played for a fool? And what is President Obama doing? I mean, what is this? He sits down with these people. He sits down with Hillary Clinton and Robert Mueller and the rest of these people, and then he walks out and says, all right, you know, I'll tell you what, I'm pissed. We'll be back after the break. If you're on hold, stay there. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program. Let's do some calls here. This is Scalal in Charlottesville, Virginia. Is that right?
Hey, it's Shalel. Hey, I'm...
Shalel.
Yeah, proud supporter and subscriber.
Gotcha.
I'd like to call you the keeper of the red pill.
Yeah, okay.
It's nice to have someone telling the truth and actually being intelligent at the same time, you know. The alternative is the truth, but not as smart. Anyway.
Well, thanks. That's nice of you to say.
I really enjoyed the program. I think Kurt Haskell's account is really damning to the official account of this underwear bomber.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, we had the shoe bomber, right? You know, remember that guy?
Yeah, I do.
And now we have to take our shoes off, so I just want to know where this is leading anyway. But anyway, there's been a couple of other people that have come forth and you know, also validated Kurt Haskell's account. But that's not what I want to talk about. I want to talk about Hangar 17. I don't know if you've gotten a chance to view any of Jesse Ventura's conspiracy theory shows.
You know, as a matter of fact, I did. Last week, we saw one where they were talking about the... is it the Bilderbergers?
Bilderberg. Yeah, all those.
And they're trying to cut the global population down to 500 million.
Yeah. Yeah, that's nice, isn't it?
That was kind of
real humanitarian.
I don't know about Jesse. He
looks good though, doesn't he?
Well, anyway. yeah, he does look good, but who is that guy, the conspiracy?
Alex Jones.
That's
the other guy that has the truth, but
I was a guest one time on his program, and I think the only reason he had me on is because I'm a fully armed liberal, and he found that kind of intriguing that there was somebody who called themselves a liberal who had guns here and guns there and guns over there, and you know.
Must have confused the poor guy.
Well, I find him very interesting. I really do, Alex.
Yeah.
He's not a friend. I don't go have a beer with him, but I find him very interesting. But to see him on Jesse's program like that, I don't know. I don't know what's real anymore. Do you?
Well, let me tell you something that I saw on Jesse's show that was
okay.
Real. I know it's real because I've seen it. There's a hangar out at JFK called Hangar 17.
Yeah.
And in Hangar 17, they showed this, if you ever get a chance to rewatch his 9/11 episode, they showed in the window and you could see beams of the World Trade Center and various things that are locked away for safekeeping.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this Hangar 17 has an interesting history. It was the hangar for a company called Tower Air, which was an Israeli airline that had a part in flying military personnel to Somalia. They had a part in the Iran-Contra affair. And this hangar is filled with all kinds of relics from 9/11, and we can't access that. I mean, we can't even access the relics of our own catastrophe. I mean, it's just
well, how do we know that that's what's really in there?
Well, I mean, he, on his show, had shown in the window, and you could see some of the beams, and there's been some pictures released. And, it's admitted that this stuff is there for safekeeping.
Well, but, I thought everything had been removed and shipped to China.
I think that's a myth. You know, I don't know. I know some of the steel was made into the USS New York, and
yeah.
No, there's been a lot of disinformation, as you know. But this stuff is there. The antenna is there. I've seen pictures of it.
I mean, ultimately, what are we supposed to believe? What does Jesse want us to believe?
Well, Jesse was just curious as to why. You know, why this stuff is there and why we can't look at it. And it, you know, he didn't hit upon the Tower Air thing, but you could see the sign that said Tower Air when he looked in the window. But, you know, I don't believe, you know, anything about the official story. I mean, all...
Well, no. I don't either, because we are...
They don't even believe it themselves.
Well, no, the people who were, I think the co-chairs of the commission now have come out and said, you know, it was all, or somebody has come out and said it was just nonsense, the whole report. But, you know, I'm not sure what to do with any kind of suspicion. I do know this. I know more by the 9/11 story than I buy this December 25th story. That we've been talking about. I mean, it was fairly obvious to me. And hell, you know, I'm a high school graduate, man. I'm not stupid. It was fairly obvious to me that the whole thing stunk. Like, this guy got on a plane in Copenhagen with no visa, no money, no luggage, but he had a bomb on him and he was going to fly to Detroit. I mean,
right.
Jesus,
well,
God, please.
You remember, when Bush, had Cap Stevens, whatever his name is now, the guy that sings Peace Train. He was on the no-fly list. And, of course, they didn't get him, of course, until he was here. And then they put him back on another plane.
Yeah.
He wasn't a risk, you know.
All right, listen, don't try to figure it out, okay?
All right. Thanks, Mike.
All right.
You're keeping me sane here.
Oh, good.
Blessings to you and Kathy and Molly and everybody.
All right, well, Happy New Year to you, too. Thanks for checking in. I just can't, you know, somebody, I don't mean you right-wing freaks who troll the program, but will somebody please tell me that I'm just crazy, that the way this December 25th story is being reported is the way it really happened, that dots weren't connected once again, and that they just didn't communicate the information, and somehow the underpants bomber slipped through layer upon layer upon layer of security in two countries on an international flight, and it was just one of those things. And like Liz said, well, you know, okay, because it was Christmas and the third shift was at work or something. I mean, we're supposed to accept this again, once again, right? I mean, over and over and over again, these things happen. That logic screams, no, it didn't happen the way you're being told it happened. But then it just kind of, you know, disappears into a Texas school book depository or something, and we're supposed to go, oh, okay. Larry is in Ehrenberg, California, listening on XM. Hey, Larry.
Hey, it's great to hear your show every time I get a chance.
Well, thank you.
For years.
I appreciate it.
I'm at a truck stop here on I-10.
Uh-huh.
But I've heard you talk about the CIA and Vietnam.
Right.
And I wanted to point out there's a real good book called CIA and the Cult of Intelligence.
Yeah, I've heard of that. I haven't read it, but I've certainly heard of it.
That's hard reading. I didn't even read it all. I was so angry, disgusted. I just couldn't read it all.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a real strange book, just put together mostly by people writing things about what they knew before they quit in disgust.
Mm-hmm.
And it covers a lot more than Vietnam.
Right.
I was 17 years old at 68 when I was went into the Marine Corps. I didn't know a thing about what was going on until long after I got out of the Marine Corps. I mean, I didn't understand any of the political stuff. But just the other day, yesterday, there was someone called into a talk show, said that she'd been working for Halliburton. And she'd been locked up with some other people that were did not like what Halliburton was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that she'd been imprisoned on an oil rig for 7 years. Didn't get released until Obama came in.
Oh, my God, imprisoned on an oil rig. I wonder. Yay, yay, yay. Larry, we got a break here, man. Thanks a lot. Be careful when you get back on the road. We'll be right back, Truth Seekers.
now, Mike Malloy.
Tim is in Detroit listening on XM. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
Well, I've been observing a lot of this stuff, not for the last however many years you want to talk about it.
Yeah.
I guess this was sort of the latest PNAC operation that we're all calling the panty bomber, the underwear bomber. And it's very interesting. I mean, if you look at history, what ultimately overthrew a lot of those old systems was violence. You know, you look at the European monarchies, which were just terrible. You know, they had slavery, they had, complete repression of women. Quite often the lords of these societies could take any woman at whim and propagate. And what brought those European monarchies to an end, finally, you know, were violent upheavals. You know, the revolutions of 1830, the revolutions of 1848, and on and on. And you know, while I admire liberals and liberalism, and it's a grand ideal, I think we're past the age of that. And I think we're probably going to see, inevitably, sort of a violent upheaval in the next few centuries of the capitalist structure if human beings wanted to survive in a democratically free society.
I don't think it's going to take centuries. I wouldn't be surprised to see a global reaction, I think it's already begun, of violence against the system, this economic system of capitalism, predatory capitalism. I mean, how much can people deal with?
Well, I think the main, and we have to blame ourselves in a sense. I mean, maybe not I'll even say it that way. We have to blame ourselves. I mean, as long as the capitalist states like the United States, Britain, and China and the large powers really remain intact, this stuff is going to continue to go on. I mean, look at the latest media garbage. I mean, they're actually trying to say, oh, the CIA, they just didn't see it coming.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on. I mean, they fed us this line of crap back in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
The American people did nothing when the Supreme Court declared George Bush the winner. Scalia said, well, you know, we have to stop the counting because it's going to harm George Bush. And the American people did nothing. The Democrats did nothing.
Right.
Al Gore did nothing. And it's
right.
Like, because we're still comparatively, if you look at the poverty rates around the world, we as Americans are still doing fairly well, you know, economically. And until a lot of that stuff finally hits home, I think capitalism will continue to endure, you know.
Well, I think it is hitting home on the... front page of the New York Times today about how many people are living, or was it yesterday, living only on food stamps? People in this country.
Sure.
Yeah, it was yesterday or the day before. The article was living on nothing but food stamps. And it talks about how 1 in 50 Americans, 1 in 50 now lives in a household with a reported income that consists of nothing but a food stamp card.
A lot of my neighbors, Mike, I mean, they're at that level.
I mean,
where
when you think about that, and then the further statistic, 1 in 8 Americans now receives food stamps, including 1 in every 4 children in this country is on food stamps. Now, 1 in 50, it's the only form of income. I don't know what it's going to take to push this country. At the same time, that was 2 days ago. I think it was in today's New York Times or someplace. $49 billion will be paid out in bonuses to these rat bastards in the financial services industry or the Wall Street, whatever you want to call it, for doing nothing. They make nothing. They churn the stock market. They sell this phony paper back and forth and take commissions. It's astonishing how much longer that's going to go on before the American public finally or somebody someplace, they finally take up arms and start executing people in the same manner that the French did during the French Revolution. And of course, if you remember your history and if you were like me, you probably read about it in high school after the revolution. In France, they didn't stop with just executing the royalty. They kept going, and it became, what was it, two-year-long, the terror.
Well, you had the Reign of Terror, of course, that went on. You had the
they killed everybody. They executed. They just chopped heads off left and right because of what had happened. And I can see the equivalent of that occurring in this country eventually, because this it just simply can't go on. And when those lights do go out, I have a list of people that I want to do business with. Hey, Tim, thanks, man.
Okay, Mike.
Take care. I appreciate it. Yeah, I've made that very clear over the years when the lights go out. There's a couple of these right-wing rat bastards that I would like to have a chat with. All right, we'll take a break. We'll be back. More of your phone calls when we come back, and I'm going to try to get this Prairie 2 thing in here. It's a whole bunch of little stuff, I think. Yeah. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. Before the hour, from Prairie 2, he writes about the value of zero. With the turn of the great odometer to 2010, the decade of the zeros is over. The Bush crime family, who got elected exactly zero times, is no more. There have been continued sightings of the person with zero soul. Dick Cheney was right about everything exactly zero times. Michael Chertoff, who as Secretary of Department of Homeland Security prevented zero terrorist attacks and appropriately responded to natural disasters zero times, is out ginning up fear of flying again. That's because he works for a company that makes x-ray machines with many zeros in the price tag to use for airport screening, something he found zero money for when he was in government. Critics of the system say the effectiveness of these machines is zero. The number of middle school students that can remember when we weren't at war is zero. The average 401k lost almost 10% of its original investment in the decade of the zeros, and that's a return of less than zero. Makes those fractional percentage point bank savings rates sound pretty good. This, of course, allows nothing for inflation. Those year $2,000 that you now only have 91 cents left from, your investment won't buy what they would when you put them into the market. Remember when gas was a dollar and gold was a fifth of what it is now? Remember when the things on the dollar menu were 39 cents? The chances of any of those 7 million jobs that were outsourced in the last days of the Bush administration coming back are about zero. Total job growth in the past decade was zero. Job growth in most decades of the last century was about 20%. 6 million Americans living on food stamps report zero income. That's right. Or that's nothing. Not a zilch. No unemployment or welfare or pension or Social Security. And thanks to Clinton's so-called welfare reform, living on food stamps is slow starvation. These people are kept alive by friends, family, charity, or pure luck until that runs out. The temperature has been below zero for a number of days across much of the country, and homeless shelters are turning people away. Nobody really tries to count them. The concern from most of their fellow Americans amounts to zero. There is some public dispute over whether or not the decade has ended or goes for another year. Roman numerals don't have a zero, but the year one was selected centuries after the fact or myth, and the formula they used was flawed, so the year is off anyway. The real question is if the decade of zeros has really ended, or if it will be the century of zeros. It could be that our time as a democracy is running down to zero. Well, that's pretty cool. How many times did Prairie 2 use the word zero in that little mini essay? By golly. Before we go back to your phone calls, you've heard that everything's supposed to come to an end according to the Mayan long calendar, at least the latest, or the last Mayan long calendar. December 21st, 2012. Right? Not true. A biblical scholar says the rapture is going to occur on May 21st, 2011. That's the real date for the end of times. This guy is named Harold Camping. He lets out a hearty chuckle, it says here. This is from the SF Chronicle, San Francisco Chronicle. Harold Camping lets out a hearty chuckle when he considers the people believe the world will end in 2012. Camping says from his Oakland, California office, where he runs Family Radio, an evangelical station that reaches listeners around the world, that date has not one stitch of biblical authority. It's like a fairy tale. The real date for the end of times, he says, is in 2011. The Mayans and the recent Hollywood movie 2012 will put the apocalypse in the popular mind this year, but Camping has been at this business for a long time, and while Armageddon is pop science or big screen entertainment to many, Mr. Camping has followers from the Bay Area to China. Mr. Camping, who's 88, well, there you go, has scrutinized the Bible for almost 70 years and says he has developed a mathematical system to interpret prophecies hidden within the good book. One night a few years ago, Mr. Camping, a civil engineer by trade, crunched the numbers and was stunned at what he found. The world will end May 21st, 2011. This is not the first time Camping has made a bold prediction about Judgment Day. On September 6th, 1994, dozens of Camping's believers gathered inside Alameda's Veterans Memorial Building to await the return of Christ, an event Camping had promised for 2 years. Followers dressed their children in their Sunday best and held Bibles open-faced toward heaven. But the world did not end. Camping allowed that he may have made a mathematical error. He spent the next decade running new calculations, as well as overseeing a media company that has grown significantly in size and reach. Camping says, quote, we are now translated into 48 languages and have been transmitting into China on an AM radio station without getting jammed once. How can that happen without God's mercy? His office is flanked by satellite dishes in a parking lot that transmit his talk show, Open Forum. In the Bay Area, he's heard on... Camping says his company owns about 55 stations in the United States alone and that his message arrives on every continent. Employees at the Oakland office run printing presses that publish Camping's pamphlets and books, and some of them wear T-shirts that read, May 21st, 2011... They're happy to talk about the day they believe their souls will be retrieved by Christ. Their souls retrieved by... I'm looking forward to it, said Ted Solomon, 60, who started listening to Camping in 1997. He's worked at Family Radio since 2004, making sure international translators properly dictate Camping's sermons. Camping is a frail-looking man, and his voice is low and deep, but it can rise to dramatic peaks with the preacher's flair. As a young man, he owned an East Bay construction business, but longed to work as a servant of God, so he hit the books. He says, because I was an engineer, I was very interested in the numbers. I wonder, why did God put this number in or that number in? It was not a question of unbelief. It was a question of there must be a reason for it. Camping is not the only man to see truths in the Bible hidden in the numbers. In the late 1990s, a code-breaking phenomenon took off, led by the Bible Code, written by a former Washington Post journalist, Michael Drosnin. Drosnin developed a technique that revealed prophecies within the Bible's text. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Many of Drosnin's more well-known findings is that a meteor will strike Earth in 2012. The same year some people believe the Mayan calendar marks the end of times. It just goes on. Oh, here it is. The number 5, Camping concluded, equals atonement. 10 is completeness. 17 means heaven. 17, heaven. Yeah, of course. Camping patiently explained how he reached this conclusion of May 21st, 2011. Here it is. Christ hung on the cross. April 1st, 33 A.D., he began. Now go to April 1st of 2011 A.D. That's 1,978 years. Camping then multiplied 1,978 by 365.2422 days, the number of days in each year, solar year. Next, Camping noted that April 1st to May 21st encompasses 51 days. Add 51 to the sum of previous multiplication total, and it equals 722,500. Camping realized that 5 times 10 times 17, the sum of 5 times 10 times 17 times the sum of 5 times 10 times 17 equals, oh my God, 722,500, or to put it into words, atonement times completeness times heaven squared. Camping says 5 times 10 times 17 is telling you a story. It's a story from the time Christ made payment for your sins until you're completely saved. I tell you, I just about fell off my chair when I realized that, Camping said. Do you have any idea what this guy just said? This is in the San Francisco Chronicle. 5 times 10 times 15 times the square of 93 equals 6.0. There you go! Yes, that sounds like Beck. Glenn is in Ontario, California, listening on XM. Hey, Glenn.
Hiya, Mike. I'm up in Canada, actually.
Oh, Ontario, Canada. Oh,
yeah.
Yes, sir.
That's okay. Oh, Happy New Year.
Thank you. Same to you.
And listen to your show every night. Enjoy it very much.
Well, that's very kind.
Yeah, thank you for all you do. And you know, it's not easy. I'm a 9/11 fanatic.
Yeah.
I discovered it in 06, and I obsess. I know. I admit it. But every aspect of it is fascinating.
It is indeed.
It has me just intrigued.
Hey, hold on a minute.
Yeah.
Can you hold on? All right, Glenn, let me put you on hold. I'll come back to you. We got to do a break. I'm Mike Molloy. Stay with us. Before the hour, we were talking with Glenn in Ontario, Canada. All right, Glenn, we're back.
Oh, thanks, Mike. There's one aspect of 9/11 is fascinating to me. The central characters, and I think most of them know who they are. The Cheney, the Giulianis, these people. Now, you would think if you had a role in 9/11, take Giuliani for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's up to his neck in it, in ways that, you know, we don't know exactly, but we know he's up to his neck in it. He not only, you'd think he would disappear, take his money, get lost, get on an island somewhere with some guy, and lay low. But no, he runs for president. and shows up on every talk show that will invite him. And these characters, these psychopaths, are so shameless that we see them over and over again. Skeletor, Chertoff, Bill Kristol, even Cheney can't shut up. So these people are psychopathic. They are shameless, and it's just amazing. It's breathtaking.
Yeah. In a more orderly society, one that was based on a little bit more logic, a little less hysteria, people like the group you just mentioned would be herded into a special enclosure where they would be given all the things they need to stay alive, you know, chew toys and stuff like that, and then just left alone. But certainly there would be no focus on them by the psychopathic media that we have.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Scarborough has that little Giuliani on the show talking about terrorism. You know, the irony is it's breathtaking.
Oh, I know. But irony is dead in this country. There is it can't be done anymore.
I know.
You know, when you have a morning team, as MSNBC does, that has Joe Scarborough on the one hand, on the other hand, Zbigniew Brzezinski's daughter.
Yeah.
And they sit and with the guy, the plagiarist from the Boston Globe, you know, the sports writer, what's his name? The guy that got fired.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? The guy got fired for stealing other people's work, and I steal people's work all the time, but at least I credit them.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have a crew like that.
Yeah.
But the Scarborough, Mika Brzezinski thing to me is like, oh my God, I used to watch that until I realized that my mind was starting to melt. So I don't watch anymore. Well, I've gone back to watching, what's his name? Don Imus.
Oh, okay. Well, I can't get him up here.
Well, Fox Business Channel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's where he is now. Fox Business Channel.
Yeah,
it's absolutely hysterical. Don Imus and Fox Business Channel. You talk about a marriage made in
I cannot even imagine that.
A marriage made in the Yucatan Peninsula or something. All right, thanks, Glenn.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, take care, pal. Charlene is in Gilbert, Arizona. Hey, Charlene.
Hey, Mike. Happy New Year.
Thank you. You too.
You're welcome. When this happened on Christmas Day, I went, oh my God, we're living a live version of Groundhog Day with Bill Murray, but this is not funny.
No, it's not.
So that's all I wanted to. Oh, I have one more thing to say. I know how they can prevent more underwear bombers.
How?
When you get to the airport, they make you take off all your clothes and they give you one of those prison paper jumpsuits, and you have to wear that during the entire flight.
That makes sense. That makes sense. All right, Charlene.
All right, have a good one.
All right,
bye.
You too. Okay, thank you. She sounded like she knew about what they wear in prison. How do you know that, Charlene? I don't know. It's just bizarre beyond belief, right? I was not around on Christmas Day when all of that happened. We were en route, as they say, and away from all things electronic. Well, not all things electronic, but I think the next day or the day after, when that story was being, you know, recirculated for the 20th time through the news cycles about this 23-year-old Nigerian guy. Kid, I mean, I've got food in my refrigerator older than him, but all of a sudden, there's the story, right? That somehow, completely on his own, except for the mysterious South Asian man, this 23-year-old manages to get on a plane in Amsterdam? Is that where he started? I guess that's where the Northwest flight originated, right? And fly to Detroit. Well, you know the whole story by now. It just made me wish that Michael Jackson was still dead. They were still talking about Michael Jackson's suicide or whatever. Was it suicide? No, it wasn't. It was murder. That's right. It was a murder. No, manslaughter. But there, you know, there it was again. So a couple of times over the next couple of days, you know, I would go to CNN on the laptop. And see what was happening, and it was like, oh no, this isn't real. They're not going to run this one past us again, are they? The dot connecting failure? Not again. And this guy's from Nigeria, huh? Oh, okay. What's his name? Bulalaba or something, right? And he did what? He had it in his drawers? And he got on a international flight to the U.S. with no passport, no cash ticket, no return. Oh, okay. And that's when I knew that I was in the Twilight Zone. And that's when I said, you know, it's time for me to reconnect with the Lynn Samuels program. I just, you know. Hey, thanks for hanging out tonight, all right? I have no idea what we did tonight. I really don't. I have no idea. But thanks for hanging out. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.